Good morning with KUAC News. I'm Dan Bross. The state announced 111 new Alaska resident COVID-19 cases yesterday. Among the new cases in 19 communities were 49 in Anchorage, 21 in Fairbanks, and 5 apiece in North Pole and the Fairbanks North Star Borough, and 1 each in the Southeast Fairbanks and Yukon Koyukuk census areas. There was also 1 new non-resident case, which is being investigated. The Department of Health and Social Services says the pandemic-long total number of Alaska resident cases has crested 6,000, while the tally of non-resident cases is pushing 900. A release from the Denali Borough says area residents who may have had contact with 2 visitors who tested positive after being in Healy, Clear, and Denali National Park are being reached out to by contact tracers. It says the visitors were in the area between August 31st and September 3rd. There were no new COVID-19 deaths reported yesterday, but there were 2 new hospitalizations, with 39 confirmed COVID-19 patients currently hospitalized statewide and another 3 under investigation for the virus. The DHSS says the current statewide alert level, based on the average daily case rate for the past 14 days, is high. An iconic downtown Fairbanks bar has been shut down due to COVID-19. A post by The Big Eye says the closure follows 2 members of a band that performed at the bar last Friday, testing positive for COVID-19 Wednesday. It says no bar employees have so far exhibited symptoms, but will have to test negative before returning to work. It says the bar is scheduled to reopen Sunday following sanitization and deep cleaning. Fairbanks' recent spike in confirmed COVID-19 cases and reports that Fairbanks Memorial Hospital's intensive care unit was at capacity this week have sparked concerns. But as KUAC's Robin reports, health officials say FMH can handle more patients.
Operations are almost perfectly normal at Fairbanks Memorial Hospital, where only 2 patients are being treated for COVID-19. In the intensive care unit, which has 13 beds, there are 10 patients, and the ICU is considered full. Why? Because 4 patients are on ventilators and require careful monitoring by more staff members who have been diverted from other duties. The other 6 are cardiac or other patients who need telemetry care.
For our entire community, we only have 13 beds where you can receive any sort of telemetry care. So if you need somebody to watch your heart, you need our intensive care unit. We recover patients after cath lab services, after surgery, a heart attack, cardiovascular issues. If they're very sick with pneumonia, any of those items can be admitted to our intensive care unit.
That's Sarah Martin, Chief Nursing Officer at Fairbanks Memorial Hospital. She appreciates how people can jump to conclusions about the hospital's capacity.
The way that we utilize divert status is also sometimes confusing. To say that we're on divert does not mean that we're not taking any admissions. In fact, if you were to have a car accident or a heart attack or a stroke and need ICU admission, we would take care of you. Our divert status means that we're not moving forward with any elective procedures that we know require intensive care.
Martin says the pandemic surge plans the hospital developed months ago are still in place. If there were ever more than 50 COVID-19 patients in Fairbanks Memorial Hospital, remember now there are only 2, the overflow would be sent to the Carlson Center, which has been in warm-ready status since April. Even though those plans are in place, health officials have turned their attention to Fairbanks and North Pole, where we are having a spike.
Our case numbers now are the highest they've been since the pandemic started, and they continue to rise, and so I think that trajectory is frightening. We're at a precipice right now where we need to be mindful and do the responsible things.
At a town hall meeting Thursday night, Dr. Ann Zink, the state's chief medical officer, and Dr. Joe McLaughlin, the state epidemiologist, said COVID-19 in Fairbanks is being spread by social contacts.
We have seen an increase in cases in the Fairbanks region, mainly younger people, 20s and 30s. We're seeing a lot of drive in there. And I also have received many comments today that the ICU capacity is full in the Fairbanks region. They then move their elective procedures and reschedule those to create some more space.
A number of the cases are military folks from the various bases. We are also seeing some cases in university students. Younger adults have been driving this epidemic for quite some time now.
McLaughlin says younger adults tend toward milder and sometimes asymptomatic cases, and they spread the disease without knowing they're at risk. In Fairbanks, I'm Robin.
The Fairbanks North Star Borough Assembly passed a resolution last night extending a declaration of emergency to December 31st. The declaration originally passed when the pandemic hit Alaska back in March, followed similar actions by other municipalities and the state. The borough declaration was due to expire September 26th, and Assemblymember Aaron Lajewski pushed for its extension to November 15th, in line with the scheduled expiration of a state declaration. Lajewski said that would portray optimism.
I kind of think perception means a lot right now, and if we have a shorter date that matches with the state, I think that's a much more optimistic way to go forward. Our collective morale, like, matters.
Lajewski's amendment failed, but the resolution as a whole passed. A former Tanana Chiefs Conference Village Public Safety Officer supervisor says she was the woman that former Lieutenant Governor Byron Mallott made overtures to at an Anchorage hotel 2 years ago, an incident that led to Mallott's resignation. Jody Potts tells the Anchorage Daily News and ProPublica that she was in Anchorage in October 2018 for a Governor's Tribal Advisory Council meeting and asked by Mallott to meet with him and Governor Bill Walker. Potts says she assumed it was about official business or a job offer, but when she arrived at the hotel suite, Mallott was alone and told her he was attracted to her. Potts says she reported the incident but did not want her name released, and very little information about what happened was revealed. Mallott resigned 2 days later and died this past May. Potts says she decided to come forward now because of harassment her daughter was facing due to lingering false rumors that the teenager was the subject of Mallott's inappropriate attention. State funding for the University of Alaska has taken the school back to where it was over 20 years ago. The state-funded portion of the UA system budget will be $257 million next year, a figure UA Interim President Pat Pitney told Regents yesterday reflects a 30% reduction in support over 7 years.
That $257 on an inflation-adjusted basis, puts us back to what we termed the desert of the 90s. So we are back, inflation-adjusted, back to 1997, 1998, the depth of the desert for the university.
Pitney emphasized that state support is the seed from which all other UA revenue is generated, including tuition and research grants. She said the university system is striving to maintain those other revenues at $400 million and cautioned that ongoing program cuts threaten that.
Disruption is what creates the nervousness that will impact our student enrollment. And we need that student enrollment. We need to give people stability and confidence.
System-wide, UA enrollment is down 8% from last fall. In a fiscal update for Regents, University Chief Financial Officer Myron Dosh said that's not as bad as anticipated earlier this summer.
In the June presentation, we were projecting tuition revenue for fiscal year 21 to be down $13.2 million, and our revised estimates are $6.9 million because that enrollment numbers, they have improved.
Dosh said UA system cuts, efficiencies, and restructuring efforts are currently on track to address this year's projected $31 million total revenue shortfall. Also at yesterday's Regents meeting, the panel voted to cut the University of Alaska Anchorage's hockey, gymnastics, and downhill skiing teams next year to save money. Alaska Public Media reports that Regents say they'll reconsider the decision if by February the teams can raise enough money to cover 2 years of their operating expenses. The decision does not impact cross-country skiing at UAA, which will continue to be funded by the university. I'm Dan Bross.